done. I'm Nancy Black. I'm the chair of this committee, and we welcome you and thank you very much for coming to join us this morning. I'm just going to explain a little bit about the process, and so you have an idea of what's going on in about the next 40 minutes. You will have 3 to 5 minutes to make an opening statement, and then there's a series of 7 questions that we've asked of every applicant, and they've all lived through them. Then members of the committee will be asking questions of special interest or whatever has piqued their curiosity during your answers. We will ask you if you have any questions about the role of a trustee, and then should you choose, you have 2 to 3 minutes to make a closing statement. Okay? Great. Okay.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here. I think I'll just tell you a little bit about myself for those 3 minutes so you get to know me a little bit, maybe things you couldn't pick up out of the application. But I grew up in Northeast Minneapolis. I went on to the University of Minnesota, and after a year there, I joined the Navy. I was a photographer in the Navy. I was on the USS Constellation for a couple of years. We served in a combat zone for 9 months. Then back to the university, and I got my first real job in Hibbing in 1975. I was hired as a reporter at the Hibbing Daily Tribune. A year later, the editor died, and they hired me as editor. So for the next 18 years, I was the editor at the Hibbing Daily Tribune. I really enjoyed Hibbing, and I didn't like to leave there. Raised a family there, and it was a great place. But I had to work too. While I was at Hibbing, I just want to mention I've always been involved in community service, and I was elected to the school board there. I served on the usual things you do in a small town, Rotary, and I was on the Chamber of Commerce board for about 10 years, and left Hibbing and went to be the editor of the Minnesota Legionnaire newspaper. I work for the Minnesota American Legion. It's a newspaper with about 100,000 circulation. It goes out to all the American Legion members in Minnesota, and I continued I continued to be involved in what community service I could at that time. I was on the alumni board for the School of Journalism at the University of Minnesota. I served on the State Board of Education for 7 years. A year after I left, they abolished the board. And then I served, last few years I've been on the Minnesota News Council, and then last year they abolished that board, so you're seeing a pattern here. If you want to get rid of the Board of Trustees, then I'm probably the guy to pick. I'm on the National Committee for the American Legion. American Legion is going to celebrate its 100th anniversary in 2018, and I'm on a committee that's going to plan that observation. It's kind of fun. It's the first national committee I've been on, although I have been. I was also a president of the newspaper, NELPA. Anyway, the Newspaper Association for the American Legion. I've written 5 books. 4 of them have been on military history, basically. One of them was written to help raise money for this World War II memorial that's right outside the door here, and we managed to raise $70,000 off that book. And so that's been my big seller. We've sold about 4,200 copies of that so far. I have a background in public service. I'm married. I have 6 kids. They range in age from 37 to 16. So I still have a 16-year-old at home. She attends the Perpich School over in Golden Valley. She's an art student. And I like to get up on Saturday morning and go down and play basketball with the guys. I'm getting a little old for that, and I'm getting to the end. But I love the competition and running around and then my other hobby is probably I play a four-string banjo and sing really loud and annoy my children so I just want to tell you a little bit about myself.
Well, thank you very much. I'll take the first question, and then we'll...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just a point of information. Today is Flag Day, and also it's the Army's 137th birthday today. And, sir, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
I just recently retired from the military a year ago, but just wanted everybody to know that today is Flag Day. So.
Thank you. Well, that's a good omen. Here's the first of the seven questions that we've asked every candidate. Please describe your understanding of the role of a trustee and explain why you consider yourself a good candidate for this role.
Well, to start out, it's really a daunting this board of trustees. It really has a daunting challenge and job. It's 31 institutions, 420,000 learners. It's just such an incredibly immense system. The role of the trustee, I think, in a system like that is, first you hire good people, and then you support them and maybe guide them. But of course, the role of a trustee has to be policy. It can't be any kind of day-to-day or anything like that. You've got people in place to do that. I think a major role of a trustee is to listen. I was interested in reading some of the minutes of the earlier meetings. I see Chancellor Rosenstone said he was doing intensive listening or something like that, and I thought that was a nice phrase. But my background is a journalist, and I've been to thousands of meetings over the year in a small town, and even working for the American Legion, and I'm never allowed to speak at those meetings. And so I've gotten used to it. I listen, and my job begins when they're done talking, and that's kind of how I would look at my role here to a certain extent. I'm a good listener. I like to bring in all the information I can before I start forming opinions. I think you have to, there's people out there that generally in their area are a lot smarter than I am, and I want to hear what they had to say. And then, of course, you want to hear both sides, too. So I see the role of a trustee is supporting staff and listening and informing policy.
Thank you very much. Representative Dittmer.
Yes, and again, welcome here. And describe your past experiences and its relevance to the Board of Trustees. Board experiences.
Sure. I think the major one would be the State Board of Education. I was appointed by Rudy Perpich, my personal favorite governor, since he was from Hibbing, and in 1987, I think. And I served for 7 years. The board is, I think, fairly, it was a smaller board. It was a 9-member board, but it was appointed in the same way with congressional district representation and at-large. I was the at-large member. I think one of the things I've learned all these boards I've served on is that, there's no reason to jump in and be try to assume a leadership role right away. I think it's better to it's better for me to settle in and learn the ropes, and so I think that's one thing I learned on the State Board of Education. The first year or two, I was a pretty quiet guy. I'm a naturally shy person anyway, so it was okay with me to not be too outspoken. But as the years went by, I think I chipped in a little bit more every year, and you serve on all these different kind of boards, and they're all different, and you just learn from each one. But the Board of Education was handling, I'm sure, issues that were very similar to, in some ways, to the issues that the Board of Trustees handles. You're trying to guide a kind of a mammoth system and keep the system going in the right direction.
Thank you.
The next question is, what do you see as the key issues on the horizon for higher education in Minnesota, and in particular for the state colleges and university system?
Well, I was reading, I see in January the Board of Trustees passed something called the Strategic Framework, mm-hmm. and that seemed to encapsulate what seemed to be the major things facing education, and those three are, access to all and partnering with, the industry in Minnesota and to provide the education that's worthwhile and needed. And then the thing, I was looking back at my application, and what I wrote on that was that what was the third part of the strategic framework, and that's it's a challenge to have high quality and low cost, and how you do that is I always remember there's this cartoon I saw one time, and it's a blackboard, and there's a scientist up on one side of the blackboard. The scientist has all these equations, and then on the other side he has all these equations, and there's a blank spot in the middle, and he had written in there, "A miracle happens here." So how do you keep costs down and I'm thinking of the access thing. How do you make it affordable for students to be there? And not have to mortgage their own futures away like some of my kids have had to do to go to college. And at the same time have a really high quality system that benefits them and benefits the state. That miracle is, kind of what I saw Chancellor Rosenstone was talking about in the rest of his thing, how you accomplish that. At the State Board of Education, we had a saying that we would say among ourselves changing education is like moving a graveyard. You just don't get a lot of internal support. And that's why I say we only said that to ourselves. But it's tough to change educational systems. They are kind of rooted in, and I certainly, don't want to trample on the wisdom of those who have spent their lives in education, but you have to have a spirit of moving ahead and change, and I think if you just maintain that spirit, I think that would be a major a step along the way, just keep that in mind that we are going to change, that we're going to get better, and as Vince Lombardi used to say, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So you guys got to, keep that spirit, I think, of change.
Well, I've got the next one, and that is, describe your understanding of diversity and then your experience working with diverse populations.
When I was on the State Board of Education, I was actually the chairman of the Multicultural Committee, and it not only had to do with what we traditionally think of, of people of color and things like that. But we also had a school for the blind, school for the deaf in Faribault. That was under my committee. So I have that background in, I think that. And then I worked for an organization the American Legion that has been described rightfully and truthfully as, you know, too old, too white, and too male. And that's a real problem that we have these days. So my organization deals with that all the time. You just have to realize that being diverse is a huge positive element in an educational system, and that you just have to, you know, gear every decision that you make on the fact that you got to keep the doors open. And I don't know, we just, you know, it's another one of those things where you keep working at it and working at it, but yeah, diversity is just incredibly important for an institution like this.
What is your vision for maximizing access to educational opportunities for students?
Well, you got to keep the tuition down. I think that's you know, maybe number one. I'm going to spin off on that a little bit. I don't think anybody should come on a board of trustees with a agenda, you know, and I don't have an agenda. Mm-hmm. But I do want to say something about the veteran population in Minsk-U, because I talked to a few people over the week, and for instance, at Metropolitan State, there's I think there's 1,100 veterans out of their student population.
Yeah,
and,
I
know. So access for these soldiers coming back can be very difficult. I mean, and not just access mm-hmm. into Minsk-U, but access into the world in general. Mm-hmm. We're just now figuring out, you know, where we've put these people and how hard it is for them to come back. At Metro State, they have these 1,100 veterans. They have one veterans rep, and that's better than none, but, you know, I don't know if that's enough. And then another small issue. I was at Southwest State in Marshall this week because our boys' state is meeting there. And I talked to the person who was in charge of their veterans program, and I was really impressed. They really have they have a heart for getting these veterans in and working with them. But there's still a few little problems, like veterans are guaranteed space in every institution in Minsk-U, but the space is not defined, and that can be a broom closet, that can be anything. And in some of the colleges and universities, the space is great and everything's fine. And I, like I say, I think everybody has a heart for it, but I understand some of the spaces around the state are not really adequate for, you know, for what that was intended for. And then there are the veterans reps. But anyway, access in general, I think, you know, our future depends on having access to the universities and colleges, and so it just has to be there. It's an absolute priority, and the biggest thing is to keep the tuition down so that people can afford it.
I have the next question, sir. Does the unique challenges of a system comprised of technical, community colleges, and state universities, again, describe the unique challenges of a system comprised of a technical, community colleges, and state universities?
Say that again. It
says, describe the unique challenges of a system comprised of technical colleges, community colleges, and state universities.
Yeah.
What are the challenges you see?
Well, I was in Hibbing when they combined the technical college and the community college, and boy, it was not smooth. It was. And I remember the thing they talked about the most is that there were two different kinds of students, and you know, the ones that went to the technical college and the ones that went to the community college, and they had developed different kinds of teaching styles for these students, and now you're trying to combine this thing together, And then add in the universities, which are, really a big part of the history of Minnesota, these state universities. And I don't know how you combine all that. It's that's why I say it's such a daunting thing to this whole system is. I saw fifth largest in the United States. I think despite all that, the system does pretty well. I think it does a pretty good job. It probably could do better, but we can all do better. I don't know. I guess I'm curious. That's one of the things I'm most curious about learning is how all this ties together and, how how does that community college out in wherever in Hibbing, and now you've got a university in Twin Cities or in Marshall, how do you tie all that into one system? I haven't really figured that out yet, but I guess they're all going in the same direction. They're all teaching, and administratively it makes a lot of sense because you can buy all the things you have to buy. You're a bigger organization. You can do all these things administratively. You don't have three different administrative systems to guide the system, but educationally, I think it's a challenge, and I'm sure it has been a challenge through the years. I know it wasn't him.
Okay, Ron.
Helps if I can see here. Thank you. Could you please see if you could perceive a conflict of interest for you in a trustee role? And if so, how would you handle that situation?
I was on the state board for those seven years in of education, and so I went through I know there's paperwork you have to fill out every year for financial conflicts and other things like that. I don't. My job, my life, there's nothing that, would be of conflict. I'm not involved in any political party or anything like that. One of the things I did when I got to Hibbing was change the There's a listing that they have in all newspaper listings that says what political party does this newspaper align to, and it was a Republican newspaper, which is very strange on the Iron Range, and I just changed it to independent, and I don't know how you can operate a newspaper without being independent. I guess I just don't see any conflict, with anything I do that would be, and of course I'm opposed to any kind of conflicts. I've seen people come on boards that have an axe to grind or that have some kind of affiliation, and it's never good for the board.
If there did happen to be a conflict, how would you handle it? Even though we know you don't
with
have
myself
one, or someone, just in general.
Someone else on the
or
board?
Someone else or yourself with.
If I could see where I was coming to a conflict, I can't visualize it, but I'd quit. I wouldn't do it. If I saw someone else was on the board, I think the first thing I do is approach them personally and say, I think you got a problem here. I think you have a conflict. I think you need to. I think you're hurting the board, and potentially could cause a lot of damage, and you need to do something. And beyond that, I don't know. You'd hope somebody would realize what they were getting into, and
okay,
take care of it.
Thank you very much. That's the end of the prepared questions. Would anybody like to ask another question? Yes. Representative Dittmer.
Yes, what is your understanding of Title IX and how and its role in the Menscu system?
Title IX is sports.
It could be sports, or it could be academics.
It's fairness for women and
correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's part of that diversity thing, you know. And it's, you know, we're working hard in the American Legion to make it and in the entire veterans community to make, you know, it's something like 20% of people that are in the service right now are women, and you know, so the world is changing, and so the VA is changing, the American Legion is changing. So I see it, you know, from that perspective, from my own small part of the world, but it's just I've been a feminist since about the early 70s, you know, when I was in college, and I used to give my female friends lessons in feminism, because that's how strongly I felt about it in those days. You know, I just, you know, there can't be any, you know, things were a little bit different back in those days, but yeah, it's just, I have a real commitment to it, and you know, it's the only way it can be. You know.
Okay, Sonia?
Go ahead.
Oh.
Why did you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't.
You weren't looking
that way. Thank you.
Alan, much of the responsibility of a trustee or board member is fiscal oversight or financial stewardship. Can you expand a little bit on your experience in this area, and if you've had a role? I know you've been on the school board. You were on the school board for a short period of time, but anything in your background?
Well, first of all, most journalists, if you ask them, they went into journalism school so they would never have to take another math class. You know? that part of it, I'm probably a little weak in, but I do run the Minnesota Legionnaire. Is really a small business, and it has about a $350,000 annual budget, and I'm the publisher basically of that, so I have to watch over it and run it, and it's been a going concern, or I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd have a job somewhere else. So I understand, and I can do that. I guess mainly I just want to say that budget is really policy. And you know, I think the policy comes first, and then the budget follows that. I don't crunch numbers really well, but I can read a page full of numbers and pretty much understand it and things like that. But I think the policy is the critical thing, and then the budget will follow that policy, which is what I saw, you know, reading these minutes, you know, that, you know, they, what Chancellor Rosenstone was talking about was, you know, keeping the quality high and the tuition low. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Sonia?
Sure. I have a question for you, sir. Within the role of a trustee, much attention is given to the University of Minnesota and the Minsky system itself, but there are greater Minnesota out-of-state institutions that need equal attention outside of the Twin Cities. How would you assure that there was equitable attention to those institutions in out-of-state Minnesota?
I have a heart for out-state Minnesota. I've been there. I've lived there. I like it there. I think that's the real deal in Minnesota. You know, and I know the Twin Cities is the powerhouse that you know drives everything. But you know, you look at the great Minnesotans like Bob Dylan or Charles Lindbergh. I just walked past his statue out there. Or Humphrey wasn't, his little memorial's out there. He's not from Minnesota, but again, from a small town. And I think these rural areas, you know, in a great sense, is the real heart of Minnesota. And how do you, you I've been in situations sitting at a table where people didn't know I was from Hibbing and they started bad-mouthing the Iron Range, you know, things like mm-hmm. that. You just have to, you know, I think, first place have, you know, understand that these rural areas are really important to the future of the state, and this is where our, you know, Bob Dylans and Charles Lindberghs are going to come from. And then, and you have to put your attention to it. You know, you have to go out of your way if you have to. You have to do a lot of traveling. The organization I work for is basically a rural organization. I travel all the time, and I actually kind of enjoy it. I enjoy seeing Minnesota, and I like to see it in the different seasons of the year, and I like the different small towns, and I just enjoy being there. But so I think you got to go out there, I guess mm-hmm. is what I'm saying, and see these institutions, and you know, make sure that they're following on board. You know, like I say, this great dynamo of the Twin Cities, but yeah, it's very important that you know you just you know make sure they're part of the family.
Yes, Billy.
As Minsky gropes with the problem of ever increasing population of students, and also a great population of students that they're not reaching that they should be, I think the administration probably is wondering how as the world is changing in all kinds of ways, how technology can be used to somehow close some of these gaps. Do you have thoughts, not in detail, but almost in the philosophy of how we need to approach the impact of technology on education and on our ability to bring more people in?
Well, that's a huge subject. I've taken, you know, like I'm sure you have too, you know, courses through technology rather than having a person in a class, you know, teaching a class. My preference is to have a person teaching a class. I like that interaction. I like sitting with other students. I like interacting with other students. So when you go to when you use technology to teach, you lose that. But what you gain, I guess, is the access, you know, to the system. I'm reading where you know Harvard and all these institutions are going to, you know, these interactive websites and teaching methods and where you can actually take classes for free and they, you know, one of the statistics I saw, one of the colleges that did that, they had like 80,000 people sign up for one class and like 5,000 graduated, you know, completed the class. And so, you know, it makes you wonder how viable that experience was, you know, for these students. But I think technology is, and I'm only talking about, you know, one little part of it, but is extraordinarily important for the future. But I think we have to, you know, make sure we don't leave the good stuff behind. You know, we don't lose the interpersonal and the peer influence and you know, and I don't know, that I still go back to the, you know, I got a master's degree a couple of years ago through the university, and I enjoyed it a lot, and a lot of it was just, you know, being with the other people and, you know, having that, being in the culture of learning, we can't lose that culture of learning while we employ a culture of technology, I guess. So.
Yeah. Yes, Ron?
Alan, to be on the board of trustees, you represent all the people of the state of Minnesota, and you really should have no particular interest, community, or constituency that you're holding to. However, keeping that in mind, if you had a choice to sit on one of the subcommittees on the board, and there are a number of subcommittees, which one would you choose to sit on, and what would the objective, what would you see as the objective of that committee?
You know, I actually looked at all the committees, and I can't remember what any of them are anymore. So I can't, you know, I can't say which one I, you know, was. I did look at them, and you kind of look, because I realized that once you get on a board, you're going to be on a committee, or at least one committee. And so I was kind of, but I
think what I'm kind of asking you for is what would your focus be, even though we're telling people to be broad, what would your focus be as a contribution to the Board of Trustees?
Policy. I probably wouldn't want to be on the Finance Committee. I don't know. I guess I'd have to look over that list again, but I think I would want to be where the, you know, where the policy is being made, I don't know. And then you know, again, and I agree with you. You know, that you can't bring in your agenda, but I think I can bring in my expertise. You know, as far as the veterans community and. You know, so whatever committee, you know, that would, you know, have a chance to help, you know, integrate these veterans into the MNSCU. So I'm not answering your question very well because I don't understand the committee structure very well. But
I think you did well. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, that's all right because they're in the midst of changing the committee structure, so it's under discussion. So next week we'll see. One of the things that we've been showing all of the candidates, and you've done a lot of homework, we can tell, this is the board packet from last month. And some of it's double-sided. It ranges everything from budgets to policies on Professor Emeritus. And we are just making sure that applicants know the time commitment and the sacrifices that are involved in being a trustee. Do you have any issues with the time commitment?
No. I know I've handled it before, and that's... We had packets a lot thicker than that on the State Board of Education, we would meet on Monday and Tuesdays, and I would just set up the weekend before to just sit down with the materials and go through them, as fast, you know, a real key is getting the materials out to the, you know, to the board members in a timely fashion so that you have time to look them over. You know, hopefully you have a background, you know, to understand what you're seeing. But as for the time commitment, I had a friend up in Hibbing, an old timer, and he was in my office bothering me all the time, and he knew I was working 60 or 70 hours a week. Newspapers are just work, you know, farms, and I'd say, Omar, why are you giving me this stuff? And he'd say, if you want something done, give it to a busy man. or a woman. And I kind of think that's true. I think, you know, if you're generally, you know, have a high motor or you have a, you know, you're a busy person, you just, you know, it's not a problem. So.
Thank you. We did have something we'd like clarified because I think there's a typo. Representative Dittmer, would you?
Yes, regarding your education, I see you got your BA degree before your high school diploma. So,
you know what happened?
You've got yourself graduating from high school in 1996. And then your BA degree in 1966.
Yeah.
I'll turn it around.
If you're wondering about why I left the university for my first job in 75 and I didn't get my degree till 91, it was those days when we didn't need the piece of paper, we just needed the education. But then after you're on the job for a long time, you go, boy, I wish I had that piece of paper, you know, because I might want a different job at some point. So I went back to the university. I only owed. What happened was I was in my last quarter. I was in my last week. And they called me up and said, the guy said, I want you to start on Monday from Hibbing. And I said, I can't. It's finals week. I have to take all my finals. I have to, you know. He said, I'd really like you to start on Monday. I said, I'll be there. And it was fine with me at the time. But like I say, as time went by, I went back and completed the requirements. And yeah, that is a typo.
Good. Thank you very much. Would you like to make any closing remarks?
I'll say one thing. I was in church the other day, and they were showing a video up on the big screen about a conference they were going to have, and I don't know who was speaking. It was a preacher from somewhere, and he was, you know, but he was. This conference was about, I guess, doing well in your later years or something like that, but he said don't just fade away as you're looking at retirement. He said make the last 5 years of your career the best 5 years of your career, the most productive, the most energetic. And I thought, and that really resonated with me. I thought, that's, you know, because that's where I'm at right now. I'm my daughter is 16, so I'm going to hang around and work till I'm 70. And it's not just because she's 16 and I want to get her through college, but it's because I like to work and I like my job. And so 70 is kind of, you know, God willing, 70 is my goal. So oddly enough, this 6-year term would fit into that, you know, perfectly. So I just want to say if this comes to pass, it would be great. It would fit into my what I plan to do over the next 6 years is to have the best, you know, 6 years of my career. So I want to say that, and I just want to thank the board for doing this, and I appreciate that you're giving up your time today to do this job. So thanks very much.
Thank you very much. I did neglect to ask you if you had any questions about the role of a trustee in the Minsky system.
No, I don't have any questions about that. I think I,
okay.
But I guess that the only question I'd have is the process and the timeline, and you know how that's going to work out.
Sure. We're on a very short timeline. The governor has expressed a desire to review candidates and appoint them before the expiration of the candidates whose term ends June 30. So whatever happens, we anticipate will happen quickly, but you never know.
Okay.
So thank you very much for coming. We appreciate speaking with you.
Thank you all.